So, when you think about learning something, I mean, really learning it, what's the first image that comes to mind?
For most of us, it's probably a classroom, right? A teacher, a book.
Exactly. The assumption is that to learn, you have to be taught, that knowledge is, well, that's this thing that exists out
Yeah,
there.
that is packaged up and then just, delivered to you. And you're the recipient.
Your job is just to open the box.
But that whole assumption that we're just passive receptors, that's what we're really questioning in this deep dive.
Right. What if we reframe that entire relationship with knowledge?
What if real understanding, the kind that sticks, isn't about instruction at all? What if it's a discovery-centered process, something that emerges from inside you?
And the sources we dug into, they just nailed this tension. They make this incredible argument that information, no matter how good it is, it has to, and this is the quote, it has to pass through this sort of inner space and it has to engage with my body maps of meaning.
And that phrase, body maps of meaning, I mean, that's everything.
It is.
It tells you right away we are moving past the brain as a computer idea. So our mission today is to explore that, to really dig into your personal epistemology, how you actually know what you know.
And we're going to define what this discovery-centered learning really looks like, especially when you put it up against the, the standard models we all grew up with.
Okay, so where do we start?
Well, let's start with maybe the most wonderfully strange and perfect metaphor from all of our sources.
Oh, I think I know where you're going.
Let's talk about the clown.
Yes, it's the perfect entry point because it just immediately breaks your
It
expectations.
really does. So the source conversation starts out talking about improvisation, specifically jazz.
Right, they bring up people like Bobby McFerrin.
Exactly how he can stand in front of an entire audience, thousands of people, and guide them to create this incredibly complex piece of music without ever telling them what notes to sing.
It just emerges. It's an
Yeah.
interactive process.
And then, just as you're thinking about music, the conversation takes this sharp turn. One of the speakers just says, "Clowns are like embodied jazz."
And you have to just stop for a second when you hear that.
You do. A clown is the walking physical version of an improvised jazz solo.
It sounds totally random, but it's actually the most precise definition of the action that discovery requires.
Okay, so what is that action? What does the clown do?
The job of the clown is very specific. Their job is to interrupt and do the unexpected and take things a different way.
So they break the pattern.
They refuse the script. They look at the normal way of doing things, the protocol. They say, "No, what happens if I do this instead?"
So that's the heart of it, that willingness to just abandon the plan, the linear path, and see what happens.
That's discovery-centered learning. It's the requirement that you improvise. The script is the lecture notes. The clown is your ability to interrupt them to find a truth that wasn't on the page.
Okay, so that idea of interrupting a script, it brings us to the actual mechanism of how this all works. The sources have a name for it.
They do. They call it the reciprocity of inner and outer.
Which I know, it sounds a little academic.
It does, but the concept is so simple and powerful. It explains why some things you learn really change you, and other things just, go in one ear and out the
So
other.
let's break it down. It's like a loop, right? With two parts.
A continuous loop.
Oh.
So first, you have the outer part. That's the information. It's a book. It's this conversation, an experience you have, the external thing.
The stimulus.
Right. And then you have the inner component.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the real work happens. This is you taking that outer information into your body, your nervous system, your lived experience.
Not just your brain.
Not just your brain. You're checking the new information against your deep embodied wisdom.
And the reciprocity part is that they're both shaping each other at the same time. It's a dance. The book you're reading changes your perspective.
And at the exact same moment, your perspective, your own history, is changing how you interpret the book.
And this is what makes it so different from the models we're used to, like the old transfer model.
Ugh, yeah. The teacher has knowledge, they pour it into the student's head. Done.
Or even the construction model, which is a little better. The student builds something from the pieces of information.
But both of those are linear, they have an endpoint.
Right. And the discovery model, it produces something else entirely. It creates new meaning.
Yes,
Yeah.
something that wasn't there before. It's not just the data, and it's not just your old understanding. It's a third thing, an emergent thing.
Like a chemical reaction.
Exactly. And the sources use this beautiful metaphor for it. They say you reform a constellation in a different way.
I love that. The stars are all the same. Those are the facts, the data
It's
points.
the lines you draw between them, the whole pattern that gives them meaning, that can shift completely based on what's inside you. Suddenly you see a bear where you used to see a plow.
Okay, so if this is how deep, meaningful learning actually happens, why is everything from our schools to how we think about expertise designed in the total opposite way?
Well, to answer that, you have to go back, way back, like 2,400 years back.
To Plato's Academy.
The sources point right there to the Academy of old, founded around 387 BCE. That place was, at its heart, a discovery center.
And not at all what we picture. We think of these silent, dusty libraries.
Right, but that couldn't be further from the truth. It was
No.
kinetic. They were active.
They walked.
They walked. They discussed things while moving through gardens. They did sports. Physical education and intellectual work weren't separate things.
Because they knew the body wasn't just a taxi for the brain, it was part of the thinking process.
And they had the one thing we've completely lost.
Time.
Time. The time to let ideas percolate, to wander and debate and let something actually integrate into your nervous system. There was no rush to get to the answer.
But then that all changed. The sources trace this really sad shift from that academy model through the monasteries and eventually into the modern university.
And we basically kept the shell, but threw out the core.
What do you mean?
We kept the form, sitting in rows, reading texts, organizing knowledge into subjects. But we lost the essence. We lost the contemplation, the walking, the embodied practice, the integration time.
And what's so fascinating is the reminder that philosophy itself wasn't originally this abstract thing you just think about.
Not at all. It was pragmatic. Philosophy was about how to live. For the Stoics, virtue was a daily embodied practice. You didn't just write an essay on resilience.
You discovered what it meant by actually living it. You tested it in your own body.
Exactly. And today, if you have a big life problem, you don't go for a long walk for a month to think about it.
No way. You Google it. You look for the answer outside yourself immediately.
And that is the absolute central obstacle for us. We are, and I'm quoting again, enculturated in a paradigm of reality and truth that's external.
The truth is always out there.
Always.
Yeah.
It's in the expert, the textbook, the five-step plan on a blog.
And the implication of that for you listening right now is huge. It means when you feel that friction in your life, that existential confusion, your trained default instinct is to search outside for a fix.
The pattern is so predictable. Something's wrong. So I Google it, I find an expert, I follow their protocol.
It's an external search for an external solution.
But the sources make this radical counterargument. They say your inner space, your body, holds an intelligence that doesn't use language.
An intelligence that isn't linear or rational. It's in your gut feelings, your intuitions.
It resides in the sub and unconscious,
Yeah.
and it is trying so hard to communicate with you.
But in our paradigm of external truth, that inner knowing, it doesn't count. We're taught to dismiss it. Oh, that's just a feeling.
And nobody ever teaches us how to access it. You have to.
You have to discover it. You have to be the clown again.
Exactly. You have to interrupt that pattern of always looking outside and give yourself a chance to discover what's already in there.
So this brings us full circle. If we're going to embrace this idea of a discovery-centered process, what are the rules? What's the new operating manual?
Okay, let's distill it. We can pull five clear principles or mandates right from the source material.
Right, number one.
Mandate one, the teacher is a guide, not an authority. Your job isn't to transfer data. It's to create the conditions for discovery. You create the safe garden for someone else to walk in.
And if you're the learner, that means you stop seeing the expert as the source of all truth. They're just providing the landscape. You have to do the walking.
Okay, mandate two. Information is an invitation, not a command. A book isn't telling you what to think. It's inviting you to think alongside it.
To let that information rub up against what you already know inside.
Yeah, which leads to mandate three. Your embodied wisdom outranks the book.
Ooh, that's a big one.
It is. True understanding comes from information from the outside plus wisdom from the inside. And if the book says one thing, but your gut, your lived experience, says another.
Trust your gut. Start drawing new lines between the stars.
Mandate four. Discovery takes time. You have to insist on having space.
You cannot rush emergence.
You can't. You need wandering. You need boredom. The best insights don't happen when you're staring at the problem. They happen when you're washing the dishes or out for a walk.
It's that contemplative time from the old academies.
We have to build it back in. And finally, mandate five, embrace not knowing.
This might be the hardest one, that feeling of confusion, of being lost.
Yeah.
We're trained to see that as failure.
But it's not. It is the necessary precondition for discovery. You have to be willing to stay in that uncomfortable, messy place long enough for something new to actually emerge.
Instead of rushing to what the sources call a fast conclusion, we just want the answer now.
And the real practice is learning to stay in that productive confusion, to stay in it long enough for something real, something resonant to come from your own inner map.
It's giving yourself permission to be the clown, to try something weird, see what happens, and learn from it.
And what's great is that this doesn't have to be a lonely process. I mean, this conversation right now, it's what the sources described. It's like free jazz, but we're also harmonizing at the same time. These ideas are emerging through our conversation.
So to wrap this all up for you, here's the core of it. Learning isn't about just receiving something. It's about discovery.
It's about what happens when external information finally meets your unique embodied experience. That's where the magic is.
The magic is in that reciprocity, that dance between the data out there and the wisdom in here.
And we forget that. We forget that, as the source says, there's just like so much wisdom that we forget that we have access to.
We're always looking for the key somewhere else when it's really about drawing new, more honest lines between the stars and our own sky.
So I guess the final question for you is a provocative one.
What are you trying to learn right now that might actually need to be discovered? What information are you taking in that hasn't made that journey through your body maps of meaning yet?
And what would happen if you gave yourself permission to just not know? To sit in that confusion until something real, something true, finally emerges from inside?
It all comes back to those three simple instructions for living a life that one of the sources quoted from Mary Oliver.
Pay attention. Be astonished. Tell about it.
Pay attention. That's the embodiment. That's tuning in to that inner and outer dance.
Be astonished. That's the discovery. That's being the clown, interrupting the pattern, and letting something new explode into view.
And tell about it. That's sharing the new constellation you've drawn, sharing the emergence, not just the instruction.